Okay, welcome back. Good morning, hockey. Happy Tuesday, everybody. It's your host, Tassos Kyrkos, on the Alethio Podcast Network. Four awesome games last night. Every series in the Stanley Cup playoffs is now underway in one way or another. We have another great four games on tap for you tonight to enjoy. A bunch of game twos getting ready to go. Every series is here. We're here. We have a bit of a taste of what is to come in the next week or two, depending on how long some of these are going to go. How about those Oilers? Edmonton looked really, really good yesterday. We'll touch on them, touch on all the winners and all the losers, and set you up for a game tonight. Buffalo Sabres also have a new coach. Or is it a new coach? We'll get to that a little bit later, but hope everybody is having a lovely start to your Tuesday morning. It's a great day here in Chicago. Got Raven Gasser on the ones and twos. How are you today, buddy?
I'm doing good.
Yeah. New on the gravel. If you haven't listened to that, go do so accordingly after you have finished listening to this. Leave 5 stars. Thumbs up, subscribe, comment. What am I missing here? I don't think I'm missing anything else.
I would say check out the YouTube, but we've been having problems with it, so hopefully that will be out by today.
Yeah, hopefully by the time you're listening to this, our YouTube issues have been resolved, and you can find On the Gravel on there as well, too. So I want to start, obviously, with these playoff games yesterday. And no better place to start than the end, which featured the Edmonton Oilers taking on the Los Angeles Kings, game one of their first round matchup at Rogers Place. That was an awesome atmosphere. We've talked a lot about the fans and how great both the inside and the outside of these buildings have been. A lot of that has to do with these Canadian markets and the fact that we have four of them in the playoffs right now. It's different in Canada, the way that they love the playoffs, the way that they appreciate it. We talked yesterday about the possibility of the Chicago Blackhawks going back to the playoffs and what that would look like, what the energy would feel like, and if there would be some of these fun outdoor watch parties that we've seen a lot. But the one in Edmonton yesterday for a Monday night looked great. Oilers, despite the scoreline, they ran Los Angeles out of the building. Zach Hyman has a hat trick. Connor McDavid had 5 assists. First time since 1998 that somebody's had a 5-assist outing in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Zach Hyman gets the first hat trick. Oilers win 7-4, but the scoreline is a bit closer than even that game indicated it was. It was never really in reach from the moment the puck dropped until the moment the final horn sounded. It was all Edmonton from the start. And look, I mean, this is going to be, in my mind, a pretty quick series. Nothing against Los Angeles Kings. They are, in fact, a better hockey team than they were last year and even the year before, both times when they bowed out to the Oilers also in the first round. But this Edmonton team is on a mission to win a Stanley Cup. We talked about that a little bit yesterday, the fact that they have to get it done this year. And when you have the best player in the world, followed by someone who is not far behind him on your roster, and those two dudes have that mentality, those two guys have that mentality, there's no way that anybody is really going to be able to overcome that unless you have just a tremendous amount of will and skill on your team. And I don't know that the Los Angeles Kings are quite there. So Edmonton goes up 1-0 in that series. Austin Matthews with the late game heroics. Toronto takes down Boston 3-2. How about that Linus Ullmark goaltending decision? We'll touch on that in a few minutes. And the Carolina Hurricanes, when everybody had them down and out, I had them down and out. And as soon as the New York Islanders went up 3-0, I kind of put that one away. Even when Tara Vinen scored to make it 3-1, I really, really thought that the New York Islanders were going to clamp down. They've played two really good games this series, and now they find themselves down 0-2 going back to the island. So that was the other one. And then Vegas takes down Dallas 4-3. The return of Mark Stone, the biggest villain in hockey, potentially. The Golden Knights also get back at Alex Pietrangelo, and they ride a quick 2-0 start to take it down the Stars 4-3. Those are your games, but I wanted to start with this Edmonton one, only because it really never felt close. You know, Connor McDavid is going to do that, not just this game, but he's going to do that throughout this playoffs. It may not be five assists every day, coming one assist short of matching the NHL record for most in a playoff game, but it is going to be dominant performances like that, where he is all over every side of the puck, creating plays, creating chances, controlling play. That is what we can expect to see from Connor McDavid, and all Zach Hyman has to do is get open and tap him in. But you know, the second Hyman goal, I want to say, just really getting open. It's such a good skill that Zach Hyman has really created and learned how to curate, how to get open better than other people. Because when you are playing with players, as Zach Hyman used to with Auston Matthews and now currently does with 97 in Edmonton, you have to be able to think the game at the level that they do, even though maybe the body mechanics don't follow up with it for you as well as it does some of these players who are playing with. And that's something that Zach Hyman's been able to do incredibly well. It's a skill he's grown at. That's why he became a 50-goal guy. It's not just because all of his goals were in front of the net. I know the shot chart is very funny when you take a look at where all Zach Hyman's goals come from. They are all right in front of the net. But this is still very, very different for the Oilers. Now you have a player who is thinking the game at the level of your highest superstar. Draisaitl's able to run his own line, and the depth came through for Edmonton. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins was really impressive for them yesterday. Warren Fogle, who's had a very, very good season for Edmonton, he scores. And Adam Henrique also gets a goal and an assist in that one. A quick point on Adam Henrique. So I think when we all think of Adam Henrique in the Stanley Cup playoffs, we think of that run with the New Jersey Devils and him scoring the overtime winner against the New York Rangers to send the Devils to the final. But it's been a while. Obviously, he goes from New Jersey to Anaheim at the end of that really good era of Anaheim Ducks hockey, when you argue that they were one of the teams that probably should have won a Stanley Cup or at least been to a final. But Adam Henrique joined the club after all that. So he never really got a taste of Stanley Cup playoff action in Anaheim with the Ducks. So that goal was, in fact, the first goal for Adam Henrique since that overtime winner against the New York Rangers. Game 6, did I read that wrong? Yes, I did. It was Game 6 of that year's Stanley Cup final, actually, was his last goal. So the following series. Even still, a span of 4,333 days between goals in the Stanley Cup playoffs. That is the longest stretch between goals by a player in NHL history. I need to get my eyes checked here. But that was just really, really impressive. I think a lot of people maybe questioned the addition, maybe not the impact that Henrique could have, but wondering if it was enough for the Oilers. Well, they made good on it on their first game of the playoffs for LA. You know, you like to see that they did play better as the game went on. You know, definitely a setting the tone kind of series. Edmonton certainly set the tone in the beginning part of it, that they are here as a powerhouse ready to go. But Los Angeles made it known at the end that they will not go down quietly also. So really impressive game. I really enjoyed watching it. McDavid is unreal. There's probably not much more I can say about that guy, but I'm sure he will do more over this course of the playoff run to make me talk more about him. So Evan Bouchard also with 4 assists in that one. Second Oilers defenseman in history to have 4 assists in a playoff game, following his assistant coach, Paul Coffey. You know, really, really impressive stuff. You know, first opening game hat trick for the Oilers by Hyman since Gretzky, Curry, Glenn Anderson in 88. You know, just it's a really good deep team. If Evander Kane gets going, if the depth really shows up, the Ryan McLeods, the Sam Carricks, those kinds of guys, and if the defense can hold up, which it did yesterday, it ended up squirreling away from them a little bit, but that is how some of these blowouts go. Great stuff by the Oilers. So they go up in their series 1-0. They were the last one to kick things off here. And then I don't think there's really any other place to start. All these games are great. There's storylines and great hockey to talk about in each and every one of these games last night. They were all jam-packed. But the return of Mark Stone, the questions surrounding that, I know there's going to be people complaining. That's not really what I'm here to address. I think if you play by the rules, you play by the rules. If you don't like the rules, then change them. But Mark Stone comes back, first game of the playoffs, second year in a row he's done that. And my one point about this series yesterday was, how long would it take the Vegas Golden Knights to feel that chemistry and to build that chemistry? You have a lot of players that haven't played together, mixing with a lot of players that won the Stanley Cup last year. I probably should have just stopped my thought right there, because the chemistry took all about 90 seconds. And who else but Mark Stone gets the opening goal for the Golden Knights. And Jonathan Marchessault with a nice shot to make it 2-0. Dallas has a goal called back because of offsides. Jamie Benn gets one before the end of the period. But then Tomas Hertl makes it 3-1 on the power play. And that was a hard game for Dallas. You know, Ottinger looked a little shaky at the start. He settled in, but Dallas really smothered Vegas after those opening 10 minutes. And then Logan Thompson was good. You got to give him credit. How about that play by Logan Stankoven to strip the puck and feed it over to Jason Robertson for the goal that made it 3-2. But look, that game was kind of not going to happen. Vegas is here. They are... all these players seem to just fit in, which is a very Vegas thing for us to witness here. How is Mark Stone and Tomas Hertl and Anthony Mantha and Noah Hanifin going to mix in with the defense? The answer is perfectly. The answer is really, really well. And, you know, Vegas looks like they're going to be a problem, not only for Dallas, but for the rest of the playoffs. Jonathan Marchessault now has a point in each of his last 11 postseason games, going back to last postseason. And Jack Eichel, you know, another two assists, was very, very good. Golden Knights are 7-2 all time when leading 1-0 in a best of seven series. Fourth reigning Stanley Cup champion over the past decade to take a 1-0 series lead in the opening round following their cup win. So no Stanley Cup hangover quite yet in Vegas in this year's postseason. You know, the question I think for Vegas going forward is Logan Thompson your guy? I think that was a bit of a surprise start between everybody. Obviously, Aiden Hill was your guy when you won the Stanley Cup last year. And he was tremendous last playoffs, for those of you that forgot. But if you're going to stick with Logan Thompson, then he's going to need to shake off the goals. The Dallas Stars are going to score goals on you. You need to be able to shake it off and move on. And I think Vegas did that, especially after the goal that was called back in the first period. Looked like that was originally going to change the whole complexion of this game. And then instead, Vegas really got that spark for that one coming off the board, even though Jamie Benn got one soon after. Even still, it builds a lot of momentum going your way, or it more so halts the momentum that the other team thinks they got from scoring a goal. Right? So Vegas picks up the win in that one. They now lead that series. Although I would be very surprised if we don't see a punchback from Dallas in game two on Wednesday. So where to next? Should we go to the 3-0 blown lead by the New York Islanders, or do we go to the Austin Matthews cardiac heroics? I think we got to start with the Islanders. A lot was made about the New York Islanders, the goaltending for one. They elect to go with Semyon Varlamov as opposed to Ilya Sorokin, when a lot of people thought that they might go back to their starter. Patrick Watt chooses to go with Semyon Varlamov. And look, he's looking like a genius for the first two periods, really, of that hockey game. And then Carolina came like a truck in that third period. I don't know that I've really seen such an intense third period by a single hockey club in a long time. this is a team that knows and is understanding the moment of, we are Stanley Cup contenders. We have the ability to do just about anything. And that kind of belief, when you're down 3-0 in a game, there are teams in the National Hockey League, in hockey and sports, and even in these playoffs, that if they go down 3-0, they're dead. That is it. Pack it in, get ready for the next game. The Carolina Hurricanes, on the other hand, look at the clock and say, we still have enough time. Sebastian Aho gets the late goal. And then Jordan Martinook shocks everybody, shocks even the fans in attendance. 9 seconds after the Sebastian Aho goal, tucks it right behind Varlamov. Jake Gensel hits the empty net. And Carolina now has a 2-0 series lead. And look, I said it off the hop, and I will say it again now. The Islanders haven't played poorly. They really haven't. You could argue that both of these games were there for the Islanders taking in one way or another. In game one, you'd argue that you needed a few more goals. Well, in this one, you got the goals. This time, you just couldn't keep the puck out of your net, especially at those opportune moments. You know, it feels like in the Stanley Cup playoffs sometimes, and I don't have the advanced statistics to back this up, but goals come in bunches. You know, we saw these two goals. We saw the Max Domi goal right after the first one in the Maple Leafs game yesterday. Goals come in bunches here in the playoffs. So if you are able to weather the initial storm after a goal scored on you, you're going to have a lot better of a chance at either keeping the score close, keeping the other team from coming back, whatever the situation is. And weather the initial storm after a goal, whether, you know, you're the team trying to pot another one or you're trying to get even with the guys that just scored. There exists that pressure always in that wave. And if you can stop the wave, you can get closer in these games. But the New York Islanders were unable to stop the wave of the Carolina Hurricanes. Really didn't give them anything at all. I mean, the New York Islanders finished that game with 12 shots. What you might look at that more is, how did the New York Islanders score 3 goals off of 12 shots? But that's playoff hockey. That's playoff hockey. Getting to the front of the net, doing the right things. We've seen, at the very least, a lot of playoff goals so far. Right in front of the net, cleaning up rebounds, creating havoc in front. You know, hectic traffic, whatever you want to call it. That's how a lot of these goals have scored, but we have seen some really stifling performances. I mean, I know Dallas held Vegas to only 15 shots yesterday. The Hurricanes held the Islanders to only 12. Florida held Tampa to a very low, I think it was 18 by the end of it on Sunday. So really good defensive performances by some of these teams that are squeaking away with wins so far. For the Islanders, we're going to see what the home barn looks like, if it is able to give them a little bit of a spark. Like many of these arenas do, I am sure that the UBS arena will be full. That being said, I don't know who you go with in goal for game 3. I would probably put in Ilya Sorokin if I were Patrick Waugh. But if Semyon Varlamov is your guy and you really don't feel like Sorokin is going to give you the best chance of winning this hockey game, then you got to go with Varlamov. But I really don't know how you don't feel that way after that game, that maybe you just put in Ilya Sorokin and you say, hey, this is your net now. We got to win this game. Go out there and win it for us. That's your guy. That's the guy you pay money. He is still one of the top netminders in the league, even though he is not playing in these games. So we will see how game 3 in that one goes. Game 3 for that one, not until Thursday. So we get an extra day to wait for that one. But yeah, I mean, great stuff. Great hockey game so far. Really, really impressed by the passion, by the fan bases. Like I said, they've been really, really good. And some of these games have been really impressive. We are still without our first overtime game in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And that's, you know, that's kind of a surprise, I have to admit. 10 games in, you would have thought maybe we'd get some sort of overtime game, but alas, we have 4 more opportunities tonight to see if we get a change in that. Last game from last night, before we get to some of the games tonight, Toronto takes down Boston 3-2. Austin Matthews, arguably, I've heard this around. Some are saying that that was his best hockey game. And after watching it, I can't necessarily disagree with a lot of people. I don't have a Rolodex of Austin Matthews games in my head. But that was such an impressive performance. One goal, two assists, including catching the alley-oop pass from Max Domi, carrying it across the line onside, and freezing Linus Ullmark and beating him and getting the big goal. And a couple bad penalties by the Maple Leafs make you think that maybe Boston's going to tie this game, and they hang on. And the series is tied, going back to Toronto, our only tie series so far, although I'm sure we will get more tonight. Big questions from this one. I think a lot of people are going to point to Jim Montgomery's decision to put in Linus Ullmark after Jeremy Swayman had a tremendous game one for the Bruins. They wanted to stick to their plan from the season and not deviate from it because they saw how that went for them last year. I've heard some things of a lot of people very much blaming the fact that the Boston Bruins not rotating their goalies last season hurt them to the point of losing to the Florida Panthers. I find that a little bit hard to believe. But that being said, they wanted to stick with their plan. They did stick to their plan. And Linus Ullmark was good. He obviously got beat a couple times. The John Tavares shot was probably one he would want back. But that being said, still a very close, very, very good game from both teams. Yeah, that was just a case of the Maple Leafs star power shining through and Austin Matthews doing really whatever he could, pulling off his best Connor McDavid impression. But really powerful performance from him. Ilya Samsonov made some tremendous saves after giving up that late goal to David Pastrnak, which was a great set play by the Bruins to be able to get him open off the faceoff. That was a really good way to end the period for Boston. Now the question becomes, who do you start in Game 3 in Toronto? I would be very surprised if it was not Jeremy Swayman. Not that Linus Ullmark didn't deserve it, but one, if you are rotating guys, win or lose, it's Swayman's turn anyways, unless you want the opportunity to get Linus Ullmark right. But I would still put in the guy who gave you the stellar performance on Saturday. So Maple Leafs tied the series 1-1. Game 3 is Wednesday night, part of a three-game night after we get 4 tonight. So, talking about the games tonight a little bit, and then we will go to Lindy Ruff in Buffalo. Four games around the horn tonight. They are all game twos. Capitals taking on the Rangers, Lightning at Panthers for game two, Colorado at the Winnipeg Jets. Oh boy, aren't we all excited for that one? And the Nashville Predators will wrap up the night against the Vancouver Canucks. I think all these games are going to be excellent games tonight. Must watch hockey. It will be very interesting to see how Tampa Bay responds after being oh so close in game one. Are they able to maybe catch the Panthers by surprise a little bit with maybe a really good start, a couple early goals, and before you know it, the Florida Panthers are out of it? You never know, but Sergei Bobrovsky has been excellent so far, dating all the way back to last year's playoffs and into game one. He was very good for them, even in a low event game for himself. Still was kicking very well. So we will see what we get in game two in South Florida. Hopefully the crowd is just as good as it was on Sunday as well. And I think everybody's going to have their eyes turned to that Jets-Avalanche game. 7-6 game the other day on Sunday. Probably the most wildly entertaining game we've seen of the Stanley Cup playoffs so far. I think a big question for the Avalanche is how good is Georgiev going to be in his return? You don't have anybody else to turn to. No update here on Justus Annunen and if he will be back behind the bench, sitting down as the backup for the Colorado Avalanche, although I don't know at what point even you would go to him if you do. Maybe if today gets bad enough, you switch him out if he is there. But it turns out here I'm reading Justus Annunen is still sick Monday and did not participate in an optional practice. They recalled Ivan Prosvitov from Colorado of the AHL. The guy who backed up Georgiev in game one, Arvid Holm, was reassigned to the Eagles of the AHL. So not a lot of NHL experience for Prosvetov. Only 24 games in the NHL, only 11 this season with the Avalanche. So how this goes is going to be very, very interesting. And you could probably put a good bet that Connor Hellebuyck will not let in 6 goals again. So can you hold the Winnipeg Jets to fewer goals than you're going to be able to get past Connor Hellebuyck tonight? I don't know about that, but if Colorado's going to try and get back into the series, that is what they will need to do. This goaltending situation is very, very intriguing to me. I don't know what you do, really. If you're Colorado, you have to go back to Georgiev and just kind of hope that it is going to fix itself. I mean, obviously, we all heard the tough quotes, the Cale Makar quote, the Jared Bednar quote of every mistake we made turning out into the back of our net, which is a tough quote if you're a goalie to hear from your team, but that is kind of how it went on Sunday in Winnipeg for Colorado. So game two tonight between those two teams will be very good, as will game two between the Vancouver Canucks and the Nashville Predators. That is your late game. Vancouver was very, very structured. By the time that game ended on Sunday, Vancouver was playing such a disciplined, structured style of hockey that really overcame a lot of the jitters maybe that come with a game one on a young roster that hasn't really experienced playing in that type of atmosphere. You heard JT Miller after the game, and this is a grizzled vet on a team that is as young as the Canucks, saying how he was almost pretty emotional, how it was one of the coolest things he has ever experienced going out there. And it's almost rewarding. You risk so much, you sacrifice so much in order to even get to the playoffs. And this is sort of the fans' way of showing their appreciation for all the hard work you've done and all the hard work you are doing now. And that crowd in Vancouver was excellent. I'm sure it will be much of the same tonight. For Nashville, it's all about scoring a little bit more, keeping your composure. That's a very good hockey team and one that will not go away easy. I know they blew the lead. It was only a 1-goal lead that they had before the Hughes-Joshua impact on that game. But if you are Nashville, just keep playing the way you were, and there will be games in this series where you get the bounces a little bit more. Ryan O'Reilly has been so good. I mean, this is one of the best players on the team, so it is not a stretch for me to say. But this guy is a Conn Smythe Trophy winner, a grizzled Stanley Cup playoff performer. That is a guy that maybe he doesn't move his feet as well as he used to or relative to other guys in the league, but the intelligence on this guy, the ability to win board battles and create in the middle of the ice in a surprising way, more surprising way than really you'd give a guy like Ryan O'Reilly credit for. He creates for his teammates. He gets himself open. He has a great shot. And he's a very opportune player. And look, I think that is going to be very hard for Vancouver to weather is the unexpected parts of things. You can plan and you can detail as well as you want, but sometimes in the playoffs, it's all about the little black thing bouncing on the ice and the uncertainty and the unpredictability of that. So how Vancouver handles that and how much more Nashville is able to capitalize on their chances will play a big part in that. And then the first game of the night would go from last to first, Washington Capitals and the New York Rangers. Game two, I don't know if we will get any returns to the defense for Nick Jensen or Rasmus Sandin. Those were obviously big blows to the Capitals in game one, not having either of them. For Washington, it's all about the start. I think if you get the first goal on the New York Rangers tonight, the whole mood changes. If New York scores first, look out, because they might score again about a minute or two later. But if the Caps are able to get the first one, we know that Trey Lindgren's been able to really shut teams down. This is a Capitals team that's had really good bounce back performances. Part of the reason why they are here as opposed to the Detroit Red Wings or the Pittsburgh Penguins is the fact that they've been able to bounce back after losses that they are not proud of the performance that they gave up. And look, the Capitals didn't give up a bad effort. They in fact had a good effort on Sunday, but part of it is just getting certain players going. You got to get Alexander Ovechkin going a little bit. And part of that is the involvement from his teammates. They need to work to get him engaged, although he just as well needs to work on him, getting himself engaged into these games. I don't think either will be a problem tonight for the Capitals. So if they get the first one, look out. This one could be tied going back to Washington. Those are your games. I don't know what else I really need to say about them. So I wanted to switch over to Lindy Ruff. Buffalo Sabres fired Don Granato last week. We talked about that. They fired his assistants. He was there for four seasons, and now he returns. Lindy Ruff, that is, returns to the Buffalo Sabres. That was after he was let go by the New Jersey Devils this year. We all recall Lindy Ruff coached the team 97-98 to 2012-2013. You know, Sabres record holder for games coached, games won, playoff games coached, playoff games won. That number is 57, by the way. But this is a good hire. I mean, a lot of people are going to look at it as a retread hire. Did you really just sign the guy to be your coach that was your coach for over 10 years? 15 years, really. The answer is yes. If you're Buffalo, obviously you just did. You have to work out getting some assistance, obviously, because you let go of Jason Christie and Matt Smith, video coordinator, who were also fired along with Don Granato. But if you're Lindy Ruff, that is kind of the coach. Why wouldn't you want to go back to Buffalo, number one? It's a great young team, an incredible young core, lots of prospects, loaded prospects. And he's the kind of coach that they were looking for. You knew Kevin Adams was looking for a guy like that in his post-game media availability, or in his postseason media availability, saying he wanted them to play harder, saying he wanted them to play more structured, be held accountable more. And Lindy Ruff is certainly going to do that. We saw how he brought along the Devils' young core now that is looking for they took a large step last season. They took a step back this season. That is why Lindy Ruff was out on the coaching market. But, you know, Kevin Adams wanted a guy that is going to hold these guys accountable. And even the players themselves talked about how they wanted somebody that was going to hold them to a higher standard. And that is going to be Lindy Ruff. You know, Kevin Adams got his start in hockey after his playing career from Lindy Ruff, was brought on as an assistant by Lindy Ruff, and is now the general manager of Buffalo. So he turns to someone he knows very, very well. And look, I think it's a good move. I know a lot of people are, you know, like I said, thinking that this is a retread hire, thinking that there are other people outside that should be getting shakes and should be getting opportunities and are not yet. You know, I mentioned a guy like David Carl, coach at national champion Denver, who is a really bright young coach. And, you know, he said in an interview that he would not leave Denver for the National Hockey League unless it was a really, really good situation. And I just think that this would have been a perfect situation for him to step into. You're not going through a rebuild. You are not David Quinn over in San Jose right now. You have a team with stars. You have a team with prospects. This is a really enticing job, I think, for anybody that would have wanted to take it. Another name I had thrown out there initially when Don Granato was let go was Craig Berube. And I think Craig Berube is a hot commodity amongst the coaching vacancies this year. Obviously, we know Ottawa is going to probably fill up their coaching spot with somebody new. But look, I thought Chief would have been a great, great get for Buffalo. The Lindy Ruff one is kind of on the same path, though, as Craig Berube. So this is going to be a good hire. It's about how you shape the roster, and do you bring in players that have defined roles and roles that win you hockey games. That is something you are seeing now in the playoffs amongst some of these elite teams, that everybody on the team has a specific job, a specific title, a specific duty, that after 60 minutes, if you've done it effectively, your team should win, or at the very least, you played a large helping hand and a team that should have won a hockey game. And Buffalo just needs more of that. Everybody's trying to do the same thing. Everybody wants to be the hero when you are down in all of these games, and I understand that. But now you gotta reshape it. You gotta get the veteran mix in there that's a bit different than the group they have now. I really hope they hold on to a guy like Alex Tuch, because I think with a coach like Lindy Ruff that Alex Tuch will thrive. And I also think some of these superstars are going to be unlocked a little bit more than we think. I'm thinking of Tage Thompson, maybe even scoring 40-plus goals again this upcoming season. So that is the Buffalo Sabres and their coaching search. And keep in mind, you know, he's one of Jack Adams. The last coach to take Buffalo to the playoffs was, in fact, Lindy Ruff. I know we had the stint in Dallas and we had the stint in New Jersey, but Buffalo has always been home for Lindy Ruff, and it will continue to be so now. Sabres open up the regular season against the Devils in Prague. So that will be his first game behind the bench with Buffalo again. So, and go check out the media availability from yesterday. We have another one coming up today at 1 p.m. Eastern that I will be tuning into, where we can get kind of more of a gauge on how this decision came about and how Kevin Adams decided that Lindy Ruff was going to be his guy. So we have this from Darren Dreger. Ivan Fedotov signs a 2-year extension with the Philadelphia Flyers. This is something that we all thought was imminent and did not know when it would happen. The AAV on this contract is 3.25, meaning it has a total value of $6.5 million. A lot of goaltending uncertainty in Philadelphia coming up this season. I would not be surprised if they went out and got somebody else to play with Fedotov. I fully anticipate that Fedotov will be the 1A in Philadelphia this season. Maybe not the clear-cut starter. Maybe he will be, depending on how well he plays come the beginning of next season. But I wouldn't be surprised if... And look, I know Sammy Urson had his moments this season, and the collapse at the end was more of a result of a lot of hockey games being thrust upon his shoulders at a time when maybe he wasn't ready. And I hear that, and I'm here for it, and I'm here for that argument all day long. My only thought is if you're really looking to be competitive next year, and I don't know what the goals of the Flyers are, the Eastern Conference is going to change a lot. You have these teams like Buffalo and Detroit and Ottawa who are all supposed to take that leap in from obscurity into playoff contention this year, all failing to do so. So you know that there's going to be reevaluation and revamping on all of those teams' front. If you look at the playoff picture now in the Eastern Conference, I don't know which of the current playoff teams would fall out necessarily. Maybe you can look at the Washington Capitals, although I don't want to disrespect a team like that is currently playing in the playoffs by saying, oh, well, next season they're not going to make it. So it's going to be a really tough, tough slug for Philadelphia in this upcoming season, regardless of who is in net. You also have the New Jersey Devils, as we talked about. They will most certainly, and they were my most disappointing team of this season, they will most certainly have a bounce back next season. So the Flyers are going to be in tough no matter who their goaltender is, unless Fedotov turns out to be one of the best goalies in the league. I don't know what kind of season the Flyers are going to have next year. So, but that's a nice tidy piece of work by Danny Briere, getting your goalie locked up for another 2 seasons. You get some eyes on him. You get to make sure that he's happy. You give him enough money to make sure that he is going to stick around. And we're going to see what kind of help they get, or if it will be a duo of Fedotov and Urson going into next season for the Flyers. But Danny Briere locks up his goalie from Russia that we got to see at the end of last season a little bit. One final note here. A couple. PWHL kicks off again tomorrow. We will talk about those games. Your PWHL stars of the week were Erin Ambrose was your first star of the week. She was really tremendous. 4 assists in that game versus Minnesota. 5 points in 2 games for her. Brianne Jenner, hat trick versus Minnesota. She was very good for Ottawa. And your third star is Aaron Frankel, who was very, very good. Go take a look, by the way, if you haven't done so already, go take a look at some of the goaltending stats from the PWHL. Some of these numbers... If you are sick and tired of National Hockey League goaltending save percentages dipping, you know, if you're a little upset by the overall play of the position in the National Hockey League, really interesting interview I listened to with Jake Allen yesterday about how it is so much of a mental thing with goaltending, and how when he entered the league, we were in an era where you had 10 to 12 dominant goaltenders in the league, and now you have a fewer number, and maybe the overall play has dipped a little bit. And yes, the shooters have caught up a tremendous amount and are at a point now where the goalies need to catch up again. Go take a look at some of the PWHL numbers. You know, small team, so small concentrated, small team number, that is, with the only six teams. So really concentrated amount of player pool. That could lead to two things. One, it could lead to a lot of offense, or two, it could lead to really good goaltending numbers, and it's led to some really good goaltending numbers. So if you get a kick out of that, like I get a kick out of that, go check that out, because you know, some of these numbers are really, really good. And if we saw them in the NHL, we would be back to 12 years ago with the days of Carey Price and Henrik Lundqvist and Roberto Luongo and. So PWHL kicks off again tomorrow. We'll talk a little bit about the two games happening tomorrow night on tomorrow's episode. Last thing here, I just wanted to give a quick shout out. Interview with CNN Prima News in Czechia. Jake Voracek officially announced his retirement. He did not play this season, although his NHL deal was up at the end of this season. He was unable to play due to lasting effects from a concussion that was sustained from a high stick from Dryden Hunt back in 2022. You know, this was a really good player. I just want to say he was coaching Jaromir Jagr's Kladno franchise. He was an assistant coach for them this season. So he was still involved with the game. It was good to see. He seemed to be really enjoying himself with Kladno. And that looks like a very fun hockey team to be a part of. I should just say any team that Jaromir Jagr owns and is also playing on is probably a good environment to be around. So he looked like he was having a good time there. Also starting his coaching career, transitioning into something new. Had to be a good feeling to take the sting off of not being able to play. You know, this guy had seasons of 81 points, 85 points in 2017-18. His last full NHL campaign, he had 62 points. You know, he had over 60 points in six of his 15 seasons. You know, I remember him, obviously, on these Flyers teams with, like, Scott Hartnell and Wayne Simmonds and Claude Giroux and Sean Couturier and these guys that were really, really good hockey players and really cared a lot about being a Philadelphia Flyer, which is something that I feel like got away from the team, and it is something that Danny Briere and Keith Jones are really trying to bring back into this organization. So I just want to say really good career for him. Won gold at the 2010 World Championships and bronze the following year with Czechia. You know, played for the Halifax Mooseheads, had a 101-point season with them. You know, just a really good player, really fun to watch, really creative, an excellent passer, had really, really good vision. You know, great career by him. Sucks that it was ended a bit earlier than he probably would have liked, but I'm sure hockey has a lot more in store for Jake Voracek. So, just wanted to congratulate him on a great career. Just want to make sure that I'm not missing anything else, but that might do it for us today. We are kind of up against the clock here. But I just wanted to check and make sure that there was no breaking news that was crazy. No, man, we hit it all today, Raven, and we hit it pretty promptly. So I hope everybody has a great rest of the day and, enjoy the hockey tonight. You have your pick of four games to choose from, or maybe you are like me and you will be watching all four of them. Like this podcast, if you're listening on Apple, if you're listening on, Spotify or whatever podcatcher you use, go listen on the gravel also, whether you're into F1, whether you are not into F1, I promise it will get you more into it. Hopefully you can find that on YouTube a little bit later today. If in that case, subscribe, leave a thumbs up, leave a comment. It helps us out tremendously. So that is greatly appreciated. Enjoy the hockey tonight. Enjoy the sports. They all should be good ones, and we will come back and recap all these games, game twos with you tomorrow morning. Have a good one, everybody.